VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning, 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee. Well, you may be Adam VanWee, but we can hardly hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Try it again.
All right. Well, I'm Adam VanWee. Sorry about that. Technical difficulties.
You bucking for a job at Verizon?
That's 2 weeks in a row. I was.
Well, yeah. See, we're used to having the settings where he comes in on the telephone, and now he's in the studio with us. So.
Yeah. Needs to go to Wisconsin again.
funny story. I was last week was in Lower Alabama, LA, for those of you not familiar with it. And the town I was in was actually repainting their water tower, which just happens to be the water tower that holds the AT&T cell phone tower. So they had to take that down temporarily while they painted the water tower. And therefore, I had no reception all weekend. So I apologize, but I'm back in the studio today.
For all those little fade-outs that we were experiencing on and off last week, you now know that there was a good reason for it.
Yep. The cell phone reception in L.A., not so good.
Yeah, that's crazy, isn't it? Oh, well. We are much better now. Welcome back, of course, to all of our regulars. Thanks, as always, for being here. We get up to do this on Saturday mornings, looking forward to it, just knowing that you're all there. And if you're new to the show because you heard about it or you're just driving by or something, try to stick around for an hour. You might learn something. We do try to stick to the subject in the show, unlike some other shows that you will listen to where they're pre-recorded and it's all about them or it's all about their little peccadillos or their cause, celeb, or whatever it is. We really like to kind of stick to the game plan here. That doesn't mean there aren't any politics involved, because what's more important when it comes to your money than what the idiots in D.C. are doing? But we will also try to keep it genericized a bit for everybody. There are things you can learn on the radio. There are things you can only learn in person. And that's why we have day jobs. So we do have an office and a website. For those of you, we don't toot our own horn very often, probably not even enough around here, for which people thank me. So whenever they thank me for that, I decide that I haven't done it very much lately. So for those who'd like to get in touch with us, I will let Adam give you the hows and the wheres. You should know that we are in Jack's Beach. You should know that we do manage a lot of money for a lot of people. We also do very intricate and life-changing financial planning. And that we are fiduciaries, fee only. We have all those buttons pushed just right, we think. And if you want to come see us sometime, it doesn't cost anything, and you can do it. How?
The easiest way is to go to your computer or tablet or phone and go to VanWeeFinancial.com. On there, you will see a button that says book a meeting. And if you hit that, it'll actually pull up our schedule. You can pick a time that's available, just as little as 2 or 3 days out. And come and see us that way. That's the easiest way. If you are not technology friendly or just a little bit more old school, you can always call 904-685-1505 during business hours and talk to one of us and set it up that way. Mm-hmm. So lots of ways to get in touch, all of them pretty easy. Last one is drop us an email, info@vanweefinancial.com. Or if you have a question that you just don't want to call the radio show and ask, if you email me during the week or even during the show, we'll try and answer it live on the air.
Okay, good. And that's spelled for the new people out there?
Right, that's always an issue. It's VanWie. Always a problem. Our name has been messed up more ways than you can even possibly imagine.
Nobody bats an eye when you say Dick Van Dyke, but Steve VanWie. That one's a tough one. Yeah, I've laughed about that for most of my 60-plus years on this earth. Anyway, you should know that on the show, we will stick to our own topics unless you intervene. And all you have to do is pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255. Or the easy way, 222-TALK. callers will go to the beginning of the line. Always, that is our first rule. You have priority. All right, we're going to start out with a little bit of what happened. We are on a roll in 2019. How long will it last? I don't know. But every week that goes by, it gets just a little bit better. And Adam will tell you some of the details, and I'm going to add some observations that make me very happy.
All right. So do you remember a couple of weeks ago you asked me what my prediction was for the coming weeks?
Yep.
And I said it would be pretty flat. Mm-hmm. Well, I was pretty right. So yep. This week was, again, pretty flat with a slight upward hint at it, I guess. So mm-hmm. The Friday really, it took a bounce on Friday to really bring the week back into the black. The Dow didn't quite make it. It missed by 5.5 points. So that was the total change on the week, which amounted to 0.0%.
That's flat.
Yeah, flat in my book. The S&P was up 0.4 and the NASDAQ up 0.9. So all in all, not a bad week. It allowed the moving averages to play a little bit of catch up and even tilt towards the positive in a couple of cases. So we like to see that kind of trading action. In fact, I really like this market overall right now for a number of reasons. The movement in the Dow all week could be traced to one or two stocks, and they were moving for very rational reasons, which doesn't always happen, and it wasn't spilling over into other stocks. So, for instance, Boeing, I believe, early in the week had some bad news. They had a bad day. It dragged the Dow down. But it didn't. You didn't see widespread panic selling across even the aerospace sector. So that's the kind of trading I like to see. It's really focused on economic news. So the other thing about this year is that it's been fantastic. You have to have an asterisk by that because it comes after the fourth quarter of last year. But if you look at what year to date, it's really pretty amazing. The Dow and the S&P are up more than 11%. Well, the NASDAQ is up more than 14%. Since the lows on December 24th, which was the lowest point in the fourth quarter of last year, the Dow is now up over 16%. So is the S&P, and the NASDAQ is up over 18%. So not bad.
That's quite a move.
Yeah.
It took quite a move down, but it's still quite a move.
Yeah, definitely. There wasn't a lot of good economic news this week, but the GDP was an exception to that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the predictions were for under 2% growth, and it actually came in at 2.6. And it looks like we have a caller.
Good morning, Chuck.
Hey, good morning, guys.
What's happening?
I remember I called you in late January. We were talking about February and if we could just go sideways.
Yep.
And then we've gone way up. So you think the market is overbought and due for a correction? I mean, the amount of bulls versus bears has really risen a lot lately. And what are your thoughts?
Well, technically, we're still in a correction.
Yeah, that's true. We haven't reached a new high. So
we got about another, 940 points on the Dow.
Technically, we are also a little overbought, but it's not as bad as you might think.
That's why these sideways moves are good.
Yeah, the last 2 weeks.
What we're doing by going sideways is allowing the moving averages to come up closer and closer. And each time the moving average gets closer to the market price, you have a less overbought situation. And investors, including their algo bots, are willing to buy again because they're not in that territory. So if we can just hum along another month, I think there's plenty of upside. And I would be very surprised if we don't close at some new highs and extend this bull market. I'm still very positive, and I'm going to be giving you a lot of stuff between now and 10:30 or so about exactly why. So we got about 10 seconds, Chuck. I can hold you over, or you can just listen for a while and call back if you have any comments.
That's fine.
Okay, we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And what you just witnessed was the absolute definition of a hard break. That means we have no control. So, Chuck, if you just hang on here, we're going to be talking some more about the reason I'm having trouble getting off my optimistic perch. But Adam wants to wrap up just a little bit more on what's happening.
Yep, I had just started talking about the lack of good economic news this week, but there was some. The GDP looked really solid. The estimate that overall was for 2.2% growth, and it came in at 2.6. And year over year, GDP was up 3.1% from the fourth quarter of 2017, which is the fastest growth in more than a decade, which is great. Two really good things in this report were that personal spending grew by 2.8% in quarter four, and business investment in equipment, structures, and intellectual property grew by 6.2% in quarter four and was up 7.2% in 2018.
But you won't hear those on the news.
No. And the thing about that is it's directly related to the tax cuts, but that's another thing you won't hear on the news. Mm-mm. The tax cuts, anyone who comes out and says they were a success or a failure before 5 years or so is up is just they have a political motivation, because you really won't know until somewhere down the road if it was a success or a failure. And what you need to do is just look back at history at the times when the U.S. has done tax cuts. I know that's not a real popular thing right now to learn from the past, but if you look back, every time it's been tried, it's been a big success. So you have to think that it will be this time too, although that has yet to be proven out and won't be known for another, I would say, 3 to 5 years.
Somebody said on Fox the other day, said, if we don't make predictions, we're out of a job.
It's so true.
Isn't it, though?
Yeah.
Well, first, I want to give out the trivia questions, and I wanted to bring up Fox first for a reason. It, as usual, is sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. A lot of you know Guy Benson through Fox News. He does a lot of work on there. Who did Guy Benson recently call the greatest GOP salesperson in the history of America? Boom.
All right.
All right. Now, let's talk a little bit about the market and some of this stuff. I was just talking to Adam on the break. One of the things I really, really liked is that S&P, as you might know, S&P 500 is a cap-weighted index. That means the bigger the company by capitalization rate, number of shares times price, the bigger the influence it has on the movement of the S&P. There is an alternative S&P 500 that's equal-weighted. One will outperform the other in various circumstances. Right now, in this recovery, this 2 months we've had a real strong recovery, what's winning is the S&P equal-weighted index. What does it mean, and why do I care? It means that there are broad numbers of stocks that are rising together. It is not being controlled by the FANGs or the Boeings. It is really an across-the-board good market we're having right now. In the years like 2015 and 16, where the FANG stocks were leading the way, if you were not a stock picker, if you didn't own Google, Facebook, and so on, then you looked at the market going up, as most people measure it by the Dow and the S&P, and you look at your own account saying, well, I'm lagging. Well, that's because you owned other things and they weren't going up like the FANGs were going up. A diversified investor, someone who practices modern portfolio theory, such as we do, we're getting rewarded this year, and our investors are getting rewarded this year because we diversify in the accounts, and the diversified bag of stocks is rising now better than the individual ones. That is my favorite thing that's going on in this market right now.
The other thing about diversified accounts right now is that if you look at where they were at the beginning of the fourth quarter and where they are today, the more conservative accounts that we have are closer or to being at their previous high or may have even surpassed it, whereas the more aggressively invested accounts, the more heavy equity accounts, which dropped further and have come back further, but they're not, in general, they're not back to where they were at the beginning of the fourth quarter yet. So the more diversified investors are being, another way that they're being rewarded is that they're seeing their previous highs taken out or are a lot closer to them in many cases than some of the more aggressive investors.
Yep. So how about some of the best things that happened this week? It's hard to have many best things, but let's try a couple. The NASDAQ, positive for the 10th straight week.
Mm-hmm.
How long ago has it been since the NASDAQ hit 10 weeks in a row?
Wasn't it positive every week in 2017?
It was a long time ago.
I'm kidding, but
no, but you're right. It was a long time ago, but it's nothing compared to the current streak of 2% plus GDP quarters. There are 7 quarters in a row now of 2% plus growth in GDP. How long has it been? The last year in which that happened was 2004. How about that?
Nice.
Now, you have to realize that a lot of what you hear out there, and we alluded to this a little bit ago, there are people out there in the media with an agenda. The agenda is to make darn sure Trump doesn't get any credit for anything. Well, when they predict, and they're wrong, sometimes they have to eat a little crow. So I've got some crow droppings here that they've been leaving around, too. But let's try something else. The home builders have really been taking it on the chin. They peaked in about September last year, and they have really been getting it. And I think it's largely because, first, interest rates were rising, and, of course, house prices are rising, and they're no longer rising. They seem to be softening a little bit, which is a good thing.
Well, it's also the start of the media trying to talk us into recession.
Exactly. That they want you to be sure that you know that there's a recession coming, so you won't spend anything. Therefore, the GDP will be low, and therefore, they'll be right. Well, you're not listening, people. You're out spending money.
Good.
Amazing, isn't it? But the home builders are now at the highest confidence level for some time. And if you look at the home builder stocks, there's an exchange-traded fund for home builders. And each week, the low is higher than the one before. They are on a steady march upward. And that is going to be very, very good for things like durable goods, because those orders have been a little bit weak. When houses are getting built, what happens? They order refrigerators, they order stoves and dishwashers, and a lot of things that last more than a couple of years. So that's a good thing. The yield curve, the long part of the yield curve, is rising. There's still a little problem at the short end, but that's even changing. But the street, so to speak, is really worried whenever the yield curve starts to invert. Well, it hasn't done it yet, but it's been flattening out. And it's got to go flat before it can invert. Well, what's happening now? It's getting steeper on the long end.
But very short. But the short end is inverted, so that's a little weird.
It is, and it'll work its way out. You have to drag it up from the right side if you're looking at it as a chart. All right, the fifth most real wonderful good news is that we're now in the best 2 months of the year historically.
March and April. Yeah.
Yep, March and April are the best months historically, the best two-month period in the market. That's why I am pretty confident through March and April that nothing bad's going to happen, and I'm even somewhat optimistic that we might take out the new highs by the end of, or the old highs by the end of April, and continue this bull market. Can I say it for sure? Absolutely. I cannot say it for sure, but I'm optimistic.
All right, I'm going to make you a deal.
You make me a deal.
I am going to tell you that I will give you the same bonus next year as you got this year.
Wow.
Only every month I'm going to pay you more than I did last year. Would you take that deal?
I think I would.
Yeah, I would too. And that's exactly
what you're talking about.
The tax law?
Yeah.
Yeah, I am. So a couple weeks ago, the media was all over a report that refunds are down by 8%, 20%, whatever the number was.
Which fits the narrative absolutely perfectly, because they're trying to say tax cuts don't work.
Yep, and first of all, even if they were, that's okay. In fact, I wish they would drop by 50% or 100% down to zero.
And I explained that a little bit last week.
It is, look, withholding taxes should not be a savings account for people to use. An interest-free savings account is the worst idea in the history of the world. You should either take that money monthly and use it as part of your pay, or you should put it in your own savings account that pays you money monthly and increases your net worth. It's ridiculous that we have to give it to the government so they can give it back to us. Anyways, my point is that it turns out that tax refunds are right now at about the same level that they were last year. What they don't mention is that everyone's paychecks are up from the year before because the withholding tables got lowered so that you actually get paid more every month. This is a really good thing. This is why personal income is up. This is why personal spending is up. All these things are happening because of the tax cuts, and in no way is this bad news. Even if refunds were down, that's good news. That's less money that you're giving to the government as an interest-free loan.
But then some other stuff happened. I have here in my grubby little paws dated March 1st, that would be yesterday, average tax refunds are up 19% this week.
Oh, my. Treasury, tax refunds match previous year.
Now at 2018 levels. Oh, but there's more. The Economist, and you remember the other name for economy, people started the economy, economics and so on. They call it the dismal science. They True. Call it the dismal science because the people who study it, well, I don't even have to finish that one. I'm going to tell you a little bit more. We're up on a break again. But they were expecting $20 billion more in refunds this year than last year. And if they didn't get it, that was going to be the way that they proved that tax cuts don't work and therefore the economy is going into recession. After we get back, I'll tell you what really happened. Don't go anywhere. We will be back after a short break. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
All right. We still have the trivia question out there. What person does Guy Benson call the best salesperson for the GOP in the history of America? You'll find it interesting. All right. We're talking about tax refunds. They were lagging last year. All of a sudden, and you won't hear this on the mainstream media, but all of a sudden, that changed. Now, the average refund for this week is up 19%. We're back not just at 2018 levels. We're pacing 1.3% ahead of last year with $121 billion back, which that's another whole show telling people not to overwithhold so much, but that's not what I'm talking about. Now, I'm going to tell you why. You won't hear this either. In December of 2017, we had a new tax law. It was effective for January 1, 2018. Everybody's method of doing taxes was changed somewhat. But the lower income people, the easy tax returns, don't have any side businesses or anything like that. They're just really simple. And therefore, they go in first. Bill Hay on the line. Bill, I just need a couple seconds first. I want to explain this. The people whose tax returns were more affected, meaning they have more money, more businesses, more complexity in their investments and that sort of thing, it took longer because they had more complexity in their returns. They had to figure it out. Their CPAs were still learning all that. Well, now they're starting to come in because everybody's got a handle on it. Well, guess what? They're getting more money back relative to last year because they got their taxes cut.
Yep. We paid substantially less this year.
Yeah. And it's so simple, people. You don't need a PhD in economics to figure this stuff out, but you need a PhD in observing the media. Good morning, Bill.
Hey, good morning, Steve. I try to wait for half hour on guessing. I was hoping that I could guess in here for your question.
Great.
All right, so here's my guess. I believe that Guy Benson thinks that occasional cortex is the best Christmas child for the GOP.
And you would be today's winner.
Oh, that's cheating, though, because, you know, I live and breathe this stuff. It's amazing how much she gets away with. I like it when she's in the news. It makes them look even more ignorant. It's the right word, I guess.
When she first got in, I heard an awful lot of people saying, oh, my God, how do we shut her up? And I'd just look at them and say, why?
No.
Why exactly?
Put a microphone in that woman's face, please.
Steve,
I absolutely love the shows that we have on WBOB on Saturday mornings. They are absolutely, absolutely amazingly educational to the people that will sit and listen. I listen to your show and, of course, Real Estate Radio before that. And then, of course, I'm drawn to the fishing shows early in the morning. I have no life. I don't sleep. But I really appreciate the fact that you guys are there. You've been there quite a few years now.
We just started our fifth year a month ago.
Wow. All right, buddy. Well, I'll let you go. Keep educating.
One quick thing, Bill. You were at the launch, I heard.
I was, yeah.
I heard your call earlier.
That is pretty spectacular, I'll bet.
Yeah, I've maintained a small contract down there at KSC since the days of Challenger. Actually, went to college for that and then got hired, and Challenger blew up, and they were good enough to bring me back as a consultant. So I don't have a big part or a big role, but obviously, it's kept me in contact with the program, and I'm happy to see that the launch went off well today. And yeah, it's going to start a new phase in Americans being able to put Americans back in space again.
Well, for the last 8 years or so, a lot of us have been crying in our soup because we didn't have a space program in this country anymore. And depending on Russia to bring an astronaut home, not good.
$162 million for two crewmen from the American Alliance to go to space and be returned on Russian Soyuz. And what a lot of people don't understand is we underwrite the Japanese and the Canadian attendees also, because generally we subcontract them to do work on our research work and scientific work on our behalf. So it's $81 million per person for a round trip on the Soyuz. Elon Musk believes that he's going to be able to cut that to get this.
And let's charge the Japanese and the Canadians a little bit of the fare, get some money back.
Goes from $81 million to $19
million. Wow. Nice. Yeah. Very nice. And there's a little pride factor in there for most of us.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks, buddy.
All right. Thanks, Bill. You be Bye-bye. Good. AOC, the darling of the right.
I'm glad AOC came moment up because coming? I have the AOC moment of the week.
Here we go.
Right now. So recently, actually as recently as a week ago, she was complaining about her criticism of the Green New Deal, including criticism from her own party. For instance, former Governor Terry McAuliffe, who's a Democrat, said that there are things that are great goals but are unrealistic. And her response was, some people are like, oh, it's unrealistic. Oh, it's fake. Oh, it doesn't address this little minute thing. And I'm like, you try. You do it because you're not. Because you're not. So until you do, I'm the boss. How about that?
It worries me that you're starting to sound like her.
I mean, okay, so there's so much wrong with this. First of all, if that's not the most millennial quote you've ever heard, I don't know what is. Second, I'm the boss? I'm the boss of what?
Of what?
What are you the boss of? You're an elected official. You're not anyone's boss. You work for us. So getting up there and acting like a little tyrant because you're getting criticism, first of all, you're in politics. You need to put on your big boy pants now and understand that that's going to happen. Everyone's going to criticize you. If you let everything get to you, you're not going to be very effective at your job. Second, saying that I'm the boss is definitely not going to work because, like I said, you're an elected official. You work for us. You are supposed to be representing the will of the people. You are not telling people what to do. They are telling you what they want you to do. So just a terrible, terrible quote. And like you said, she's just a great mouthpiece for the Republican Party.
Yeah, absolutely true. All right, I'm going to change horses here in the middle of the stream. I've been talking for weeks about Social Security, and I wanted, now that we've been through it for about 6 weeks, I wanted to wrap it up. And I'm going to wrap it up by saying, should you or should you not plan on Social Security when you're making your long-term retirement plan? And the answer to that is not yes or no. The answer to that is, among other things, age-related. Now, I'm pretty confident. I'm already getting paid, and I don't think anybody who understands that seniors vote for politicians would ever consider taking someone already collecting and not keep it going somehow. What if you're close? Say you're 60 and you're looking at a retirement in the next 2 to 8 years, 10 years. Well, I don't think you have much to worry about either, because once you've hit the magic age of about 60, historically speaking and statistically, you are going to vote. And you are not going to be happy with people who want to stop or cut anything for you. Now, let's drop down a little bit. Let's say you're in Adam's age group, 40, early 40s. What do you think for the average person would be the right answer to that?
I mean, I think that we can count on getting something.
Yeah, there are three choices, yes, no, and in
right.
between.
I personally don't use it in my own plan, but I think that I'm being overly conservative that I will get something. It's absolute political suicide to assume that someone somewhere is just going to turn off Social Security. It's just not going to happen.
But so, it is financial suicide not to address the problem.
Absolutely. So it's going to change. And I can only assume that that means higher taxes and lower payouts, but I don't think it will go away completely.
What about your son?
I don't know.
When you
really
get
don't
here.
Know. I mean, I there. So the millennials are the biggest age or generation outside of the baby boomers, mm-hmm. and they might even be bigger. I can't remember, but so there will be a lot of people that are going to work here in the next few years, and I don't know if I haven't studied the statistics, but you'd have to think that those people are going to pay in an awful lot into the system, and the boomers are going to draw out an awful lot. So Generation Z that my son is in, he's kind of the X factor,
yeah,
for lack of a better word. I don't know what's going to happen.
I don't have any statistics on the birth rate for the younger people at this point either. I know
I don't know
either. It's terrible. But that means we've got to do a few things as a society. One of them is legal immigration.
Yep,
that's very important. We have to address the issue, not the issue of Social Security, but the issue of addressing Social Security. It's called the third rail of politics because all you got to do is bring it up and you're out of here. Mm-hmm. We have to get over that. I wish I had a solution to tell people, look, folks, you got to sit down and talk about this thing because it's really important. We'll wrap that up on the other side. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And this segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. Call Troy at 662-9794. Right, we're wrapping up this conversation on financial planning and the role of Social Security in it, which is age-related. It has some other factors, too, but it will depend a lot on what generation you're in approximately and how much time you've got. We know it's in trouble. We know it can be saved. We knew we blew a great opportunity to fix it back in the
did we ever
George W. Bush presidency. He actually started talking about privatizing a little bit. And what happened? The same thing that always happens when you bring it up in politics.
Lies. Lies are what
lies
happened.
And they threw out the idea because they know it is political suicide. Even if you're not running for re-election yourself,
yep,
the people in your party are.
Yep.
And they will not allow you to say anything about it.
It's crazy. I think the best solution now would be to say at some point, okay, everyone who hasn't been born yet, you're going to get a private account. There's no more of this Ponzi scheme. It's over. We're going to pay everyone who's already born what we've already contractually obligated ourselves to pay them. But anyone who hasn't been born yet, you have your own private account starting at birth. When you work, everything that you pay in and your employer pays in goes into your private account. It gets invested however they want it, whatever safe way they want to invest it, and that's it.
One of the socialist proposals for this coming year is that at birth, everybody gets a check. Now, let's say for a minute that you'd even consider it.
I wouldn't.
What would you do with it? You stick it in a private account and don't let them touch it till they're 65. You know, that could turn into some money.
Yeah, for sure.
There are many, many ways to address the issues we have, and none of them are anything but politically lightning rods, I guess, is all I can think of. We have to get over it as a society. Now, you know, I will mean-mouth, bad-mouth Paul Ryan till the day I die, but I'll give him one thing. He was willing to address this issue.
Yep,
he was. No one would listen to him. But he would address it.
Meanwhile, we just keep pretending it's not an issue, and 2032 is right around the corner.
All right, so what's another way that you can create a better retirement for yourself? Well, one of the ways is to, are you ready for this? Save money.
Ooh.
Hmm. But isn't that getting harder and harder? That's what we always hear.
That is what we always hear. But I was surprised to learn this week that there is economic indicator I had never heard of.
Nor had I.
It is called the financial obligation ratio. And
what's it for?
It's it's for measuring how much your monthly expenses are relative to your free cash flow. So if you have rent or a mortgage, if you have a car payment, if you own a home, if you have student loans, all those things are factored into what are your financial obligations. And then they take that and compare it to your free cash flow. And I was surprised to learn it just hit an all-time low, meaning that we have more free cash flow to cover those obligations than we've ever had since 1982 when this indicator was created.
It's the opposite of the news.
Yep. All you hear about is how all those things are rising, mortgage debt, student debt, car debt, all rising. And that's all true. But the thing is, incomes have also been rising. Interest rates have been low. Inflation has been low. And when you put it all together, we're actually in better shape to cover our financial obligations than we have been since the history of that particular ratio.
When was the last time you paid $4 a gallon for gasoline?
It was probably in 2009.
What's one of the major reasons?
Gas is a lot cheaper.
Well, why? Energy independence.
Yeah.
So public policy plays a big role in these things.
And it also, public policy takes 10, 20 years to implement, or at least to reap the rewards of in some cases, and that is a classic example.
But I was really quite surprised and impressed that this is actually working. Now, what we got to do is get the young people who are living this life with their free cash flow and convince them that that doesn't give you license to go to Starbucks three times a day and then go out to a fancy dinner every night.
It's funny you bring that up, because I am right now working on a piece for maybe next week or the week after about the Netflix monthly subscription generation. So if you haven't noticed, every business in the world is moving to a monthly subscription.
Yep.
And there are so many ways to waste money. You can take on more subscriptions than you have income, and it's really, really easy to do these days because everything is offered. Oh, do you want to pay $100 a year or $10 a month?
Well,
I'll pay $10 a month. That's a lot cheaper. Wait, no. It's $120 a year, but it seems cheaper because it's easier when you're digesting it $10 at a time.
Death by a thousand paper cuts.
So I'll bring that to you in a week or two, and I think it's pretty good.
Yeah. It's it's ingenious, I guess.
You know,
one of the headlines this morning that I was looking through was about the absolutely we're going to have a recession this year, might be as late as next year. But one of the reasons is, look at all the retail stores that are closing. The Gap, Victoria's Secret, a lot of people are announcing just this week they're closing. Well, how long have we talked about death by Amazon? That we have been on that since we've been doing this show.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely happening.
Bricks and mortar retail, not what it used to be. Good morning, Kenny.
Kenny. Hi, guys. Hi. Yeah, can you hear me?
Gotcha.
Yeah, better.
Yeah.
What's up?
Just going to throw in a couple of ideas and things that, you know, it's honorable that you're talking about, you know, Social Security and whether it's going to be around and whatnot. And, you know, I've tried to think of the problem in different ways, you know, and one way I've thought about it is if, you know, what gave me this one idea is, you know, you ever seen that show Tiny House Nation?
Yep.
Well, imagine if everybody could basically have a mortgage that fits, you know, a tiny house. In other words, you start off in a tiny house, but as you move up, you don't go from a 500 square foot to a 2000. You go to a 700 square foot, then a 900. And by doing that, you keep your mortgage small, and then that extra money could go towards retirement.
My gosh, Kenny, so, it sounds to me like you're advocating personal responsibility.
Well, I am, but you know, they're not really, you know, I mean, I know there's a lot of townhomes out there now and all, and, you know, but God, they start at, you know, $200,000. So that's just one idea. The other idea is, people that want to be means tested, in other words, they have enough money, they would be willing to take some type of reduction as long as their kids or their grandkids got some kind of reduction at some point.
And so that's where if you could trust politicians, you could make that deal, I bet.
Yeah, I agree, but I don't trust them, and I know you don't, Steve.
Yeah, I mean, no, it's just...
It's a great idea.
Yeah. So, I mean, if there was a way to do that, and of course, you know, when you can put the money into investments early, it's got a chance to compound and grow and all that.
That's so, the ultimate answer, the power of the marketplace.
Yeah. I honestly wouldn't even mind if they just put it into T-bills or government securities, just something conservative. That's fine with me. Just get it invested.
Compound it. Yep. Absolutely.
Now, do you ever remember reading any articles? I read one article about over in Germany, and they're probably not the only one. There would be like four seniors splitting one large apartment, and they were doing it to save money. Mm-hmm. And have you read anything else about any of that?
No,
I have not.
Nice to know what. Yeah,
there, well, people.
Nice to know what other other countries.
It sounds to me like I nailed it right at the first. You are an advocate of people taking personal responsibility, and if everybody would do that, we wouldn't have to worry how screwed up our politicians make everything, because people would be okay anyway. It's certainly available. I think listening to a show like this and having ideas thrown out like yours is a good start. All right, thanks for calling. The music's playing. We got to run. Well, that's been fun. Another quick note on things like the headlines. Everybody is saying things like Trump's 3% GDP growth won't happen this year. Well, guess what happened? But they're so anti-Trump out there that they figured out if you go from a certain point in the year to a certain point of the year after this 2.6% came out this week, that his annual was only 2.9. Now, if you took it from December 31 to December 31, then the annual was 3.1, but they didn't want you to hear that because he promised 3 and he only delivered 2.9 on theirs. Don't listen to too many of the wrong people. Listen to this show. We will always tell you the truth right up to the minute. If we're ever wrong about something, call us and tell us. See you same time, same station next week. Thanks for listening. We will be back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.